Inside Security Podcast with Martin and Steve Yvette and Little Joe. News Yankee Steve giving weekly updates. Armor guy managing the microphones. Joseph's there and sparkles while the vet's in the airport. Andy Googles Microsoft on his iPhone. A family-friendly bucket full of southern goodness. What will they be ranting about this week?
It's episode 173 of the Southern Fried Security Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about vendor relationships. Joining me tonight are some fantastic folks here on the podcast. Steve Reagan, all the way from Indianapolis, Indiana. Steve, how are things going?
Good. What's up, everybody?
I think we need to do a shout out to all our Norse homies who ain't got a job no mo. we'll talk more about threat intel next week, and we'll talk about the, but yeah, wow, Norse. The other laugh you heard of there was our good friend Joseph Sokoli, who's, Joseph, how are you, dude?
I can't complain, and if I did complain, who'd really listen?
I'm sorry, you were saying something?
That's right, see?
And joining us from her, secure undisclosed location, which curiously looks like a Taqueria del Sol inside the perimeter of Metro Atlanta, the always lovely Yvette Johnson. Yvette, how are you?
I'm well, but no Taqueria. I'm actually day two into a juice cleanse. No judgment.
Well, margaritas are predominantly lime juice.
That's totally true. They're predominantly fruit.
Yeah, so there you go. So before we dive into today's topic, let's let everyone know we've been nominated for the 2016 Security Blogger Awards. If you are a podcaster or a blogger and or otherwise have a media presence, you're eligible to vote in this. You can go to securitybloggersnetwork.com and cast a vote. There are some great podcasts in the best security podcast arena. Humbly, I would submit that we would ask for your vote. But again, there's some great podcasts out there. And if somehow this year we are the bride and not just the bridesmaid, my understanding is that Steve Reagan is there, and he will pole dance if we win. And if we don't win, he will pole dance twice.
So, you know what?
Vote wisely.
For the proper amount of money, that could really be entertained too, because I'm going to say if we don't win, I'm going to pole dance three or four times. I might not just stop. They'll have to kick me out.
Until they hand you the trophy.
Yeah.
So let's have a conversation about vendor relationships. I mean, there's a lot of different stuff going on. I mean, just sort of in the news lately, Trend AV had some rather serious issues. And Tavis Ormandy from Google, I love Tavis's stuff. I just never want to be the topic of something he writes about. And then also we have, TrustWave is being sued by a gaming company that they did some work for. So Yvette, I mean, one of the things that, you know, you were interested in, it was talking about the whole private versus public disclosure method of talking about when our vendors fail. So kind of talk through what you're thinking.
So how these caught my eye was obviously these big flaws in Trend Micro AV. I have lots of clients who have this antivirus. And for better or for worse, I know how we all feel about antivirus. But what really caught my eye was some tweet screen captures from Tavis saying, you know, "Dear Trend Micro, WTF, were you thinking? This bug is completely ridiculous. We'll send full report in a minute, sigh." So that pretty much publicly puts them on blast for this issue that they found. And I'm thinking, if you follow Trend Micro, if you're a customer of Trend Micro, what do you start thinking? Do you panic? And should he have done this on such a public forum? Could he have just skipped tweeting about this and sent the full report and said, "Hey, guys, get it together. Here's what's going on."
Right. So I don't want to necessarily have the responsible disclosure debate, because that could go on forever. But I get where Tavis is coming from. I mean, my understanding is that Tavis's normal thing is he does contact them privately at first. But once a company develops a pattern and practice of simply ignoring or not responding, He loses his patience and he uses his bully pulpit, which is fairly substantial, to notify them of the error of their ways.
Which is fair. This was a really critical defect. So I get that. I'm still wavering on how do you treat this? And as a customer, and you saw this, what would you do? Would you publicly start flogging them?
Sure.
Saying like, yeah, get it together, guys. Or would you get on the phone to your account exec and start saying privately, WTF?
Well, I think in a little bit, we're going to talk about more about what we think security leaders can do. But just me professionally, I usually try private conversations first. But if I'm being ignored, I will take it publicly. Because once you do that, any chance of a relationship is pretty much going to get nuked and paved. So unless you've decided to essentially, you know, axe the relationship, public confrontation generally doesn't work.
Well, and I'm assuming that he doesn't really have a relationship with Trend Micro, but...
Well, and by publicly coming out and saying something like this, he does a good job of ensuring that there's not going to be much of a relationship in the future either, right? We've seen this... with other researchers as well. And, you know, I've seen this in my own thing is where when you start really publicly calling out vendors, you can very quickly find yourself where a vendor won't talk to you, even if you do have something significant to talk about.
True enough. But that, again, that's a topic for another episode.
Just to weigh in, though, and I think this is important, a lot of researchers have that adversarial relationship for a reason.
Sure.
It's much like a journalist. I mean, I have relationships with several companies that I have publicly flamed and set a fire in an article. It's not because it just had to happen.
But, you know, that to your point. So what do you do? I mean, I feel pretty strongly the first thing you have to do as a security leader is really assess the situation. You know, does it really impact you? Trend, for instance, you really had to parse through what Tavis was saying to see if it actually impacted the products that you were using. The other thing you need to look at is this is part of a pattern. There's no love lost between me and TrustWave, so I got no problem saying this. If you look at the list of who the major PCI breaches have been for the last several years, and you look at who the QSA has been, pretty routinely, it's TrustWave.
Agreed, but you also have to look at one point, TrustWave probably had 80% of the QSA market.
That's just part of the pattern. The other part of the pattern is the way TrustWave continues to market its services through various vendors, right? I was on the receiving end of a TrustWave pitch through a processor that I seriously had to take two or three showers afterwards to begin to feel clean.
It burns.
It was horrible, right? So, and then you also just start looking at the pattern of what's around TrustWave. And if there's enough smoke, one is, I think, reasonable to assume there's some sort of fire going on. Your mileage may vary. And if you have an ongoing relationship with TrustWave and you feel Martin's off base, that's entirely your decision based on the data points you have to make. Your mileage may vary. The other thing you really need to think about with some of these epic fails is this a potential incident? Do you need to spin up an incident response? If the trend vulnerability directly impacted you, you needed to essentially treat that as an incident and start figuring out what you could do from a compensated control perspective to fill that gap. And I think from a security leader perspective, the last thing you need to do when you're assessing is figure out how your stakeholders are going to respond. 2, 3, 4 years ago, you'd have these notifications like from a Tavis or whatever, and it would be so deep inside the security echo chamber that members of the management team in the line of business probably wouldn't hear about it. These days, you know, these major epic fails on the vendors are showing up in Business Week, they're showing up in Forbes, they're showing up in the Wall Street Journal. And line of business executives are seeing it. And unfortunately, they don't have all the context around it. They have to base it purely on, you know, what's being presented in the article. For example, if you look at this past weekend, the absolute implosion at Norse, That's being reported on in mainstream media. If you were a subscriber to Norse and your, you know, boss sees that, that's a potentially significant impact to you because you've got to start explaining what happened, why it happened, and what you're doing. You know, think about Trend. If you were a Trend user or a Trend shop or not a Trend shop, if you use TrustWave, right? You know, the news about this lawsuit got pretty good dissemination through the mainstream media. How do you talk to your legal people? How do you talk to your risk people? How do you talk to your senior management about what's going on in this relationship that you have with TrustWave where you may have invested significant amounts of money? And you need to think through that. So from an assessment perspective, what do y'all think? Am I missing anything or am I just going off the deep end?
I would say that while you're trying to, you know, figure out how the stakeholders are going to respond, how do you convey that no matter what they're reading in the paper or in the news, how do you convey to the stakeholders that their immediate reaction should not be panic, that we have processes in place, and when you see a trend in the story, don't call me at 3 a.m. and say, oh my God, are we pwned? Because we're not even a Trend shop. We don't use TrustWave. How do you convey that to them and keep them calm while dealing with that type of situation?
The thing that's helped me probably the most is kind of knowing the level of interest that the various stakeholders are going to have. And as often as I can, I proactively will say, oh, this story's come up. They're going to see it. They're going to have questions. And I'll proactively shoot them an email with a link to it saying, hey, you probably saw this. Just real quick, here are points A, B, and C about why this isn't a deal for us. Or if it is a deal, here are the three things we're doing already to mitigate whatever the problem is. They may get back in touch with you. The normal response is, hey, thanks. Keep me in the loop. But that's a way that you can build confidence in those stakeholders that you're actually paying attention. The worst thing you can do to the stakeholders is for them to know something about one of your vendors that you didn't know. That's an epic fail on your part.
And, you know, a lot of it does come down to communication.
Absolutely.
Is ensuring not only is there a good communication route from you to them, but also from them to you, right? That if you have some upper management or something along those lines who finds out about a security thing, even if they do find out about it before you or before you've had a chance to really formulate a response, at least that there is enough of a relationship there that you can have a discourse without it getting hairy real fast.
Right. As a CISO, if your COO or your chief compliance officer or CIO can text you or is willing to shoot you an email and ask that question, or you've got a relationship with them where you can fire them that email and they're going to appreciate it, that's gold as a CISO, because it shows that you're trusted, you're understood, and they see you as another member of the management team. The other big thing, so once you've done the assessment and you've started figuring stuff out, you really need to get good information. Unfortunately, for a lot of these events, most of the information is going to be hard to really get. It's a lot easier when you're a big customer. You know, for example, when I worked at the airline and, you know, a vendor had a screw up, it was fairly easy. And this, you know, that sort of, you know, mentioned it, is you can call your account executive and say, look, I'd want you in my office this afternoon explaining what happened. I remember, you know, after the big RSA brouhaha, RSA actually did a really effective job of sending people out to their customers. And after you sign a non-disclosure, explaining from their perspective what happened, what they learned, and what they were doing different. And that went a long way to rebuilding the credibility and the relationship with RSA. The other big thing is you got to beware of third parties with an axe to grind. So let's talk about the TrustWave lawsuit. Most of what we know came from where? Mandiant. Okay. I'm not saying Mandiant's a bad place, but there is an inherent conflict of interest when Mandiant is reporting on what they said TrustWave did or did not do. And also remember that Affinity Gaming is trying to figure out a way to explain how they got hacked twice. I'm not saying the information that Mandiant provided or the information Affinity is presenting is wrong. What I'm saying is you got to look at it through a lens that understands who's presenting that information. You can do the same thing with when it came to the Trend stuff. Tavis is with Google. right? Google has a somewhat adversarial relationship with other IT vendors. Got to look at it that way as well. And you got to keep an open mind. This is sort of where Yvette was trying to push me to with Trustwave, because she knows how much love I have for them. But you got to have an open mind. Very few vendors out there are completely the devil. So keep an open mind. Sometimes it's not as bad as you think or you want it to be. So there's that. Any other hints or suggestions for folks on other than, direct messages to Steve to say, I missed something, what the hell is going on? Which I'm reliably informed occasionally happen from time to time.
Yeah.
What are some great ways? And Steve, I'm really looking to you to say, where should people look for information, and especially if there are ways that they need to kind of filter or just look at the information? Because you deal with this stuff day in, day out.
Oddly enough, I actually get asked that question a lot. If I'm not reading the news, how do I stay up on security topics or things that I may face in my vertical? And my answer is pretty uniform. Get to know your peers. Get to know the people who fight the same battles and face the same struggles you do. Because I promise you, the malware problem or the software problem you have today, somebody had last year. And they can tell you a story about it. And that's why I'm so up on telling people, find the local security group, find your local security professionals, interact with them, go to those meetings and the little dinner get-togethers and things like this, because that kind of peer networking helps you in the long run. And it's not just for staying up on current events and news or products and things like that. Who knows, maybe one day you might actually meet a guy who has a great plan on, how to talk to the board of directors and make a really smooth presentation that helps the overall security stance of a company. And it's something you've never thought of before. Or you go to a conference and you're doing the meet and greet and you meet a woman who invented this great system to keep track of all of your IR policies and keep them updated. Anybody who's ever actually had to activate IR, the minute you realize it's out of date or the information's bad, the kind of panic that sets in at that moment, it's really hard to describe until you've experienced it. But everybody's had that empty pit in their stomach.
Yep.
But yet networking and learning how to stay on top of things like that, that's where you get your benefit from.
Absolutely. And the thing is, you don't necessarily always need to build your own network. For example, one of your bosses, Bob Bragdon, hosts these dinners from time to time where people get to come and have a conversation. And
those things are amazing.
They're just
amazing.
I get to go to one this week, and I value them greatly because I get to talk to peers that I don't get to see very often. A vet's employer, sponsors those as well. It takes time to find the right way and get yourself invited to, but once you're in those groups where you can sit down and have a just open and frank conversation with other CISOs who may not even be in your vertical, but you can have a candid conversation around what's working and what's not and what your experiences have been, that's gold. Absolute gold.
I mean, I used to do this when I was at the airline and would go to the PCI community meeting, and they used to do something called Birds of a Feather. And at lunch, you would sit with – I sat with other airlines, and it was a safe place to – for me to talk to another global airline or domestic airline and say, hey, how do you guys solve for this? Airlines have very specific problems, but we're all trying to achieve the same thing, get people from A to B and get them there safely. And so doing security is sometimes hard.
Just a little bit.
But it was a good opportunity to say, how did you guys do this, or how are you solving for this, without anybody exposing their business faults, right?
Exactly. And the big thing is, when you're in those environments, and Bob Bragdon does a great job of explaining the Chatham House rules, the fastest way to never get invited back to those is publicly disclose the things you hear. Yep. So just don't do that. So the last thing to do once you've had a vendor that's failed horribly is make some hard choices. And this is where I think a lot of folks fall down, is it's easy to read about a fail on the part of a vendor. It's sometimes harder to do anything about it. And I think there's you have really two choices. You keep those who deserve another chance or who are working hard to make it right. And I'll point to RSA. You know, RSA's fail was pretty epic, but they deserved another chance. And whether you love RSA or not, that was the assessment we went through. But also on the flip side, you got to ditch those people who don't, and you got to execute on that plan. There comes a time, I think, when certain vendors either don't fit what you're doing anymore, or you've reached a point where the relationship is so damaged that you need to move on. And you just do it. And I'm not saying you can do it overnight. You just can't pull your AV vendor in on a Monday morning, fire them, and have new AV out to thousands of endpoints by Tuesday morning. It doesn't work that way. Between budgeting cycles and contracting and license negotiations, it takes time. But what you've got to be able to do, and this is a leadership thing, you've got to be able to articulate why this group has to go, gain the consensus around it, and then execute that plan. And you have to just steel yourself to the fact that the vendor that's going to be escorted out of the building is going to find out about your plan before you're ready to pull the final plug. And they're going to work very hard to change your mind.
You know, I was actually just about to ask you about that. So, you know, in the situation of, for example, replacing an AV vendor, if you're going to do something like a RFP process or something along those lines to figure out a replacement, the security community is pretty small. It's pretty likely that they're going to find out. How do you deal with a situation like that? Is it just kind of steeling yourself and dealing with it as it comes up in the situation, or...
Okay, so over the years, I've put out RFPs or RFIs where certain folks were not invited to participate. And you get a phone call from them. Hey, I heard you're RFIing, you know, technology. Why? You know, we've got a great solution for that. My response usually goes along the lines of, hey, you know, we don't talk about RFIs during the process, so I can't really talk to you about it. After it's over, be glad to have a conversation with you. And that conversation generally never happens. The last thing you want to do from a supply chain perspective is start explaining to a vendor who's not in the process why they're not in the process, especially if there's the remotest chance that they may litigate it. Just, hey, I can't talk about it. Can't talk about it. Be glad to talk to you about it when it's done. Just move on. If you've made the decision that they're not going to participate or you're replacing them, it's it's sort of like telling your girlfriend, that's it, baby, we're done. And, you know, that's it. You're done. It's probably not the best example in the world, but.
You might want to rethink that one.
Married 25 years, right? I've got to think way far back for that. So just for those of you who are already sending me Twitter messages, I'm sorry.
So to kind of piggyback on that discussion about RFIs and things like that, I do want to kind of shift the discussion a little bit. So let's talk about active vendor relationships, or, you know, things like the demo process. Martin, you this past week, I guess, you tweeted out this fantastic series of tweets regarding a demo that clearly wasn't going the vendor's way.
Yeah, and actually those tweets got a lot of feedback. So one of them was a pro tip. Kicking off your demo with, I hope you'll understand these concepts, sets a pretty sad tone. And another pro tip, presuming you know our business processes during your demo means you aren't showing us what we are looking for. Ask first. Part of vendor management, part of vendor relationships is before they've even sold you anything. And I think this is something where some vendors do a really, really good job. And they're doing sales right. They're talking to you. They're discovering what you want to see. They want to try to map what their products and services can do that solve problems or add value for you. Some vendors, on the other hand, think that the mere fact that they're offering to sell you something should make you incredibly happy. You should pull out your checkbook and write them very large sums of money and just be thankful. And there's obviously lots of in between. But at the end of the day, if you're getting a crappy sales presentation, generally the best relationship you'll have with the company is during the sales process. So if it was my experience has been, if it's a really crappy demo, and you actually buy it, the service will be even worse. I could be wrong on a specific topic, but that's been my rule of thumb. Yeah, it's the way it works.
Well, and one thing I do want to kind of bring up, because I've spent a significant amount of time either supporting vendors very closely as a consultant or on the vendor side as well. And one thing that I do find really useful, especially if you're out looking for a solution, is to ensure that you're communicating with your vendors ahead of the demo.
Absolutely.
And this goes back to kind of our discussion about your relationship with upper management and things like that, who I assume you're probably going to have some other folks in the room. You know, you might want to display a specific value or a specific something that this particular vendor brings to the table. And it's often important to make sure you communicate that ahead of time.
Absolutely. You don't want, because remember, it's transitive. If the vendor really screws up and you're the person who got them there, and your boss and your boss's boss and some of their peers are sitting there, they're not going to look at the vendor with that quizzical look that says, why are you wasting my time? They're going to look at you, and that's a bad thing. Well, guys, we have burned up all of the time we have. Fantastic conversation. So real quick, if you're interested in following the Twitter feed for the podcast, it is at SFS Podcast. The show notes, including the links to some of the topics we talked about, will be at southernfriesecurity.com/173. In those notes will be everybody's personal Twitter handle. I suggest you follow them, especially right now. You need to follow Steve Reagan at SteveD3, because I'm just going to say Norse, and we'll leave it at that. So, yeah, that's the laughter we love to hear, Steve. So on behalf of everyone, including the sadly absent Andy Willingham, who is dealing with a quote, dealing with issues at work, unquote. Thanks for being with us here tonight, and join us in a couple weeks when we have a great conversation about threat intel. Thanks, everybody.